Next case is 96-1270, 96-1271. VFW Post 1238 versus the Liquor Control Commission. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case, and we're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Robert Nader, who is here and will soon be on the bench. Judge Nader is the judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 11th District. And he is now here. Mr. Raber. Would not get a warrant in a case like this, the fact that this is an administrative matter pursuant to rule other than a criminal investigation?
Yes, it is.
With regard to our Posey case, and does this fraternal club building equate to a home or office for purposes of deciding the reasonable expectation of privacy?
No, I do not believe so, because they hold a liquor license. And when one applies for an additional liquor permit in the state, thereby a sense of a reasonable and lawful condition of Posey matter. One of those is an inspection by the Department of Liquor Control to make sure that the permit holder, the operation of their business, sees compliance with rules and regulations of the state. The Sixth District held that the agents entered to be unconstitutional because the agents failed to identify themselves and announce their purpose. This decision is inconsistent with this court's decision in Posey, and we argue that it should be reversed for that reason. State versus Posey, a police officer made entry into an FOB club with a member. In Posey argued that this did not constitute voluntary consent because the officer did not identify himself and he did not state his purpose for being on the police premises. This honorable court found that under the totality of the circumstances, the consent was legally and voluntarily given and there was no deception. The officer's entry. In fact, we have quoted verbatim this court's third paragraph of the syllabus, which states that consent to enter an area where illegal activities are being conducted does not mean the statute being voluntarily given, merely because of the fact that it would not be given, but for the fact that the other person did not identify themselves only challenge the agent for membership when he was at the bar area, where in plain view it is these six electronic video gambling machines, and the agent's playing two of the machines. In fact, the police is not relying on the security of his building or post when they unlock the front door and permit people to really enter and see the unlocked
phone. Assuming that one has no problem with the fact that the agent gained access by simply pressing a buzzer and there was no real deceit here, how far, once the agent gets into the club, what's the limit of the agent's authority to search? Here he went, he saw some things in open, he could see the machines being played, but I think the tip ticks is what they're called, were in the cash register, weren't they, drawer?
Yes.
So he had to open the cash register drawer, have it open for him. Do we need to be drawing lines here of where the agent, how far the agent can go without a warrant?
Yeah, in this case, maybe you need to make a distinction between the entry and then the subsequent most administrative search. Since we are arguing that the initial entry is based on consent, the agent's what he could do once on the premises would be limited in the scope of that invitation. In this case, we argue that he did not exceed his limited scope of the invitation when he went to the bar area and immediately ordered a beverage. But in plain view, when the agent did see more gambling personnel at the back bar, at that point he did properly identify himself. He did advise the permit holder that he would be conducting one's administrative search that is carefully limited in time, place, and scope. And he did, and as a result of that search, he did find more than he had prepared for.
So when he advises the proprietor that I'm a liquor agent and not somebody who's thirsty come in here for something to drink, his consent ends, does it not?
And then he, on the day of the legality of the subsequent one's administrative search, depends on the authority of the mail without regulation.
Then he also have problem cause then?
The standard in the liquor case is a reasonable suspicion.
How would his authority allow him? What if he came to the door, knocked on the door, someone came to the door, and he said, I'm a liquor agent, I'm here to inspect the premises, and he goes in. Would that be any different than what happened here?
It would be, well, no, in the sense that the agent would still be lawfully on the premises.
Can the agent conduct inspections at a liquor permit place during the hours of operation?
Yes, they can. The warrantless administrative search regulation limits the time that the search should be conducted to when the business is open.
Certainly. So, the liquor agent go knock on the door, present his credentials, and say, I'm here
absolutely
for an inspection, and
yeah,
walk in, and if something is open and notorious in front of him, he can do the same thing that he did here, can't he?
Yes, he does. In fact, the post is really relying on his misplaced confidence that he will permit entry until results will not reveal their wrongdoing. The Fourth Amendment does not protect a person from misplaced belief to whom he voluntarily reveals his wrongdoing. I would emphasize to the court that four other appellate districts in the state have found that there is no violation of the Constitution to enter a permit premises. I would also point out that the 12th appellate district, in subsequent decisions, AL Post 194, stated that the 6th appellate district in this case misinterpreted the decision of AFW Post Appellate District, there was one sentencing judge. You say that agents who are lawfully on premises should not be required to lie their eyes if the unlawful conduct is out there. We respectfully request the style of the court to take the blindfolds off the agents of the department and again allow them to, in all areas of this state, allow them to credible and effective inspection of permit holders doing business in this highly regulated industry.
Counsel, and Justice Sweeney put the question to you. These agents didn't enter under the auspices of an administrative search.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you're into this analysis of whether or not that it was a consensual entry, because that was their approach. They didn't do what Justice Sweeney suggested, knock on the door and say, hey, we're here, you know, under Rule 49 in the statute that permits a search. So don't we, are we permitted to analyze it under that scenario when that's not how the notice is?
Well, our position is the liquor agent is authorized to enter on the liquor premises to conduct inspection which is in compliance with the law. In this case, the agent has been all over the liquor premises, a convenience store or a bar.
The problem here is, though, that this isn't these premises are not open to the public as we understand it. I guess they buzzed them in, but I suppose it was on the belief that these fellas were members.
I believe, yeah, that was a mistaken belief, and I would argue that this particular premises is not only open to members, but the fact that they did allow
was any evidence taken or presented as to the method by which people would enter? Was this the norm, the locked door with the buzzer?
No, the BMW folks did not present a case of commission. They merely stipulated to the investigators objective report of the past.
Would you distinguish your position if the door were wide open?
Then, no. I probably would not be arguing, but
the
agent still have authority to enter the premises.
Could he enter then without knocking first or announcing himself? Or when you have a buzzer that's pushed and the door is unlocked, it seems to be a response that says welcome. But if you have an open door, it's because it's open. If you have private premises, you have no right to enter.
Well, I reckon this is not. Since the BMW Post does have a liquor permit, it's not a private premises, and the liquor is category beyond that. If the door is open, there's nothing, type of license that this company has before, which is issued only to liquor permit holders that have a membership roster. So there's nothing in that statute tightens the expectation of privacy or makes or elevates this type of premises to a private premises over and above the other classic of liquor permits that are granted in Chapter 43.
If the VFW Post had one of those machines where you put a plastic card in that some clubs have to get admission to the premises, would you have a different problem? And they used a dummy card. They got the card in and got in with some card they'd made up.
In that case, that could be determined as sound interpretation, but no, I think the agent would still be authorized to enter the premises. The only time an agent would not be authorized to enter a premises is if the permit holder actually obstructed him at the door after the agent identified himself and his authority under statute to conduct an inspection.
Well, are there not different situations? I mean, you have the private residence, which is clearly private, and no one is allowed to come in without permission. You've got the premises which have a barrier in the form of a card or punching in a number, or whatever that clearly says you have to have some special knowledge or some token or whatever to get into this building. And then you have this, and then you have the VFW here, which all one had to do was ring a bell, and they were buzzed in. No one checked them, that seems to say, as Judge Nader said, that seems to be the other end of the spectrum, the far end of the spectrum, that short of a restaurant where you obviously walk in, that here the barrier to admission seems to be pretty low, even though it's a private club. Perhaps the VFW here needed income, and so they didn't care that somebody came in. I guess they did because they asked once you got to the bar, but the impression would be by buzzing the bell and getting to come in and no one checking you that you're welcome to go in there. You didn't argue that, but I'm wondering if that, and I'll obviously ask opposing counsel the same question, it seems to me that there's a pretty low barrier here for the public to come into this club, and the agent, therefore, is not like the agent who slips in when the door is open and members coming out or falsifies, you know, his identity or whatever to get in. Thank you, Mr. Rayburn. Mr. Foley.
Court. I think what this case is really all about is whether there are any limitations whatsoever on the manner in which six control agents are conducting administrative search on a private club. And I think if I understood the comments made by Donald's counsel earlier, the Department of Liquor Control and now the Department of the Enforcement Commission, the Department of Public Safety, said that there are. All the court below did. Say when you rely on your administrative search authority to conduct an investigation of a private club, at least show it a search that authority. When you show it the court, you should present your credentials and say, I'm with reason, I'm here to do an investigation.
Well, but to whom at the door would the agent shown the identity here? He buzzed the doorbell, the door was open, and he walked in, and nobody was there to ask him who he was, or you remember or not. It wasn't until he went to the bar, as I understand it from the briefs, that he went to the bar, and at that point, when he wanted to purchase something, he was asked if he was a member or whatever to identify himself. He really wasn't. Isn't this a situation where the club seems to be saying, if you know how to press a doorbell and the door opens for you, you can walk in and maybe you want to come in, maybe there's music there, you don't buy anything, but you come in. There's nothing that says to that person that you may not enter unless you have a membership number or a membership card, is there?
Nothing specifically. I want to ask this question, and I don't mean to beg your question. This is a private club. The public knows that. And when you go to this club, there seems to be a presumption you have some entitlement to enter. Now, the investigative co-partner and his partner, and the argument here is that there wasn't a seat. But clearly, these agents went there to conduct an investigation. They got a complaint from their office, an anonymous complaint, or instruction to go out there and investigate.
Does that make any difference, though, Mr. Foley? Does it, what's the real support for your argument under the Fourth Amendment or the, I guess that's your argument, that makes a difference, that this was not, somehow that affects whether or not this is an unreasonable search and seizure, that either they knocked and said, we're here, here's our badge, we're going to inspect, or they were buzzed in, arguably a consensual entry. How does that make any difference, the badge or just being buzzed in?
This court may find in this given case that this was a consensual entry, but that doesn't resolve the controversy briefed here by the four cases, all involving slightly varying fact patterns.
Yeah, which, okay, may I ask you, are you conceding that it might not make any difference?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm trying not to get too stuck on the facts here.
Yeah, I understand.
And so in this particular case, you may choose to disagree with the Court of Appeals and rule that this was in fact a consensual entry.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other cases, and there are a number of cases cited in the brief where we see a systematic process on behalf of the control agent of sneaking in behind somebody, of using false credentials, false identifications, lying at the doors to bribe.
But But those are easily, we know how to distinguish cases. I mean, we could write words that say, this is not that case, this is a different case, so.
Just if I understand your question, what you're trying to get at is, where's the not the middle principle come from?
Yeah, and actually, in this case, we will get to that, but if we were to determine that the entry here was consensual, and therefore there was no Fourth Amendment violation, then we would not ever get to the certified issue in this case, which is the one that you really want us to get to, which is the exclusionary rule issue.
Right.
But you would concede that, wouldn't you, that you don't get there in this case. If you find that there's no Fourth Amendment violation, of course, we don't need to get into whether the exclusionary rule applies, which is a certified question here.
Right.
Okay.
We'd come to that in the companion case.
Yeah.
Well, are there not two steps here? Are there not two things to consider? One is the entry, the consensual entry, and then the next question is, once you're there, assuming the entry is consensual, what's the extent of the consent? I mean, can they go through drawers? Can they go in the office or the desk and look for things, or can they just see things that are out in plain view? And I think you're giving up too easily on the consensual entry, because that seems, well, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me there are two issues.
I don't want to give up on that issue. I can see where the court might be headed in saying that the initial intrusion to their initial entry to the facility may be consensual. I also agree. Consensual for what? In this case, the only evidence to indicate what was for was to check the membership credentials of the investigator entering the facility, which is exactly what was done. Now, the argument has been made here that there was no deceit at all, but I submit to you that the investigator had two opportunities to simply state who he was and why he was there. The first was at the door when he was open, and the second, when he was specifically responsible to do so by the barmaid. He chose not to do that. He chose to fumble through his wallet while he and his co-worker were investigating and viewing and find evidence of a violation. So, there is deceit. There is deceit in terms of what specific conduct was engaged in by the agency. But to get to the issue of whether or not the exclusionary rule applies, there isn't a question that applies. We don't have to get to the constitutional issue to get to that point, because it's specifically codified in the statute. 43.01.10.6c requires that the investigation of the Department of Liquor Control must be conducted in a reasonable manner, and further provides that if they're not conducted in a reasonable manner, if that's so found by the Liquor Control Commission or a court of competent jurisdiction's grounds, press evidence or dismiss the case.
This was not conducted in a reasonable manner?
Well, not getting to the reasonable manner portion of it, and that's what the Knopf-Knopf principle. In 1995, the United States Supreme Court specifically declared the Knopf-Knopf principle as part of the reasonableness inquiry, at least under the Fourth Amendment. In the state of Ohio, the Knopf-Knopf principle is codified in our search warrant.
We're talking about apples and oranges. You agree to certain regulations by the liquor department when you accept their license, do you not?
We don't dispute the industry's highly regulated. We don't dispute the
rules. Not one of those conditions that you be able to sell liquor that the agency may inspect for illegal types of activities on the premises, but for you to have the privilege to sell liquor. Isn't that one of the conditions?
Statutory.
If you don't want the agents coming in like they did here, you can give the license back, can you not? And make it a private club. You don't have to sell liquor there, do you?
No.
All right. So the agent has the right to administer the searches that were done here, especially there's no evidence anyone was at the door. You said they didn't identify themselves at the door. I took it that the door opened and they walked in and closed the door. So there's no evidence anyone asked them at the door. They went up, they were asked for a card or they asked for a drink, and they said, we're here to make a search. Well, let's stick to the facts of this case. And they saw the gambling devices in open view. What's the illegal activity that they entered into here?
illegal activity against their unwillingness in this particular case to identify themselves at the time of entry and when asked to do so.
Well, who asked them at the time of entry to identify themselves?
No one asked
them. Let's get by that hurdle. You keep on saying that, but there's no evidence of that.
But it's a golden opportunity for them to assess. That's all I'm saying. No, they were not.
All right. So what did they do illegally after that?
When they were asked to present membership credentials.
I'm sorry, we're not members here. We're from the liquor department. We're here for an administrative search.
But that's not what they did.
Okay.
That's not what they did. What they did was fumble through the wall in anticipation of what they do need. They didn't have to do that.
Okay.
They also were trying to purchase alcohol beverages at the bar, which they clearly knew something they couldn't do because they weren't.
Well, the facts would indicate, though, that on their passage from the front entrance to the bar, they had in plain sight the poker machines or whatever type of video gambling devices were present. So they had the plain view exception before they even asked for a drink and or asked for membership.
That's the
everything that happens after that is no consequence.
That's the appellant's view of facts. The way the stipulated report reads, the sequence of events was to go to the bar and request a drink, grumbling with those of his case. While fumbling through the wall of the presentation, he makes these observations. So it's almost equivalent to the facts, and I understand the continuum of the premise. I understand that she saw it there. And I think what's found in the Virginia case before we did that this is another case of consensus, which is where the to assert their authority under English at 79, and the simple way of asserting that is by identifying yourself as liquid.
You're taking a position here, the exclusionary rule applies to any administrative search of any department?
Well, no. There's a major distinction that has to be drawn between remedial and penal.
I suspect that there's some way to enforce the failure to comply with a search in any department. And there's a punitive aspect of that, which goes along the line of quasi-criminal.
Correct. And that's what the court will help. This is, in fact, a quasi-criminal proceeding. It's roughly a conclusion from support for that. In the statute, for example, 4125, which directs the control commission what to do, and grants the authority to suspend and revoke licenses, says that in determining the length of suspension, you shall consider the businesses, how much business they make, so that the penalty you impose for the offense, that's the language of the statute, is a sufficient penalty and deterrent. That's criminal. That's revised in 4501.252 provides the authority to commission to impose a forfeiture in lieu of suspension. Now the term forfeiture is significant because this court has a number of prior holdings that recognize that forfeiture proceedings are in their nature criminal, even though they may be similar to format, where it is municipal. So the function here for which the forfeiture in this particular area is enforcement and is penal. There are remedial situations, for example, when there's an investigation being done to determine whether or not a license should be issued. But all that's strictly an administrative inspection to pass along the validity of an application for permit. So I think the distinction that we have to make is what is the object for accomplishing the permit. In this case, the license was suspended for 180 days. We have other cases.
You restrict that then to the object of the search rather than to the capability of imposing forfeiture or enhanced penalties?
If I understand your question correctly, when we are taking enforcement action for penal purposes, I think what penal authority does have declaration, I think the federal courts have made that very clear. This court doesn't need to get to that constitutional issue because the statute tells us so. The statute engrafts the exclusionary rule into a specific finding, which again makes this a penal and criminal meaning, at least qualified constitution. So you do decide this based on the statute alone. And whether the search was conducted in a reasonable manner, at least as far as the district court is concerned, reasonableness is determined in part by employing an opt-in principle or explaining why it should be. So I guess the distinction I am trying to make is precisely that. None of us.
Well, the not an announce doesn't come into play unless you determine that there was no consent.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And all the other, the warrant is the rule, and these are the exceptions. And if the exception applies, of course, it excuses the need for any of the other requirements.
Saved about a half a minute of your time.
Cases pending to be for disposition in accordance with our review of this case. Are you familiar with the facts of the other cases that stand here? Do those other cases involve more obvious efforts at deception for entry and or search?
No, if you'd like me to tell you the facts of the other cases, two involve the situation where the agent waits out from the outside the front door and they enter as a
behind someone else.
Two other decisions are where one, the agent merely just entered an unlocked front door, and in the fourth case, the agent's handing a membership card, and they use that membership card to gain entry. We first submit that closing the card decision.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion in the motion. Please adjourn to court.
All rise.